calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Boy, the American press is... I'm just flabbergasted. It takes a lot to get me speechless, and I'm on the edge of it. I am just flabbergasted. Am I starting to sound like Rush Limbaugh? For years and years and years, the right wing in the United States, particularly right wing talk radio, was going on and on and on about how the mainstream media wasn't actually reporting the news, and they weren't telling the whole story, blah, 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 blah. And over the last 25 years or so, they've pretty much bought up all of the mainstream media. Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Act, and you end up with a defense contractor owning NBC and Disneyland owning ABC, and, you know, on it goes. And Viacom and CBS and AOL Time Warner with CNN and MSNBC owned, you know, and making programming decisions, bumping Phil Donahue, their most profitable show, off the air because he's taking an anti-Iraq war position. And it's starting to seem to me like, you know, the American press, well, it's not just starting to seem, I've been saying this for 2 years, but it's just the brazenness of it that the American press is not doing their job. What do we have to do to get the American press back to doing their job? It used to be, back before 1987 when Reagan stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine, and back before 96 when good old Bill Clinton pushed through the Telecommunications Act of 1996, used to be that public service, that news was about public service, that in, or, you know, if you had a broadcast license, that if you had a, you know, if you were a radio station, a television station, or even a newspaper, if you were going to mail at fourth class rates, newspapers are subsidized in the United States. They've been subsidized since the founding of this nation. Literally since the founding of this nation. For the first 60 or 70 years of this nation's life, the paper on which newspapers were printed was subsidized. And after the Civil War, that stopped. That came to an end as William Randolph Hearst started building his empire based on those subsidies. But for all that time, I mean, ever since Ben Franklin basically first put together the first post office in Philadelphia and then, you know, brought about a federal post office, ever since Franklin and the post office, we have said, hey, the media is so important, the news is so important, it's so important that people know what's going on, that we're going to create a whole separate category. A whole separate expense, that newspapers can mail at so that people can get the news. And newspapers don't have to worry so much about being profitable. What they have to, you know, so they can really attend to getting the news out. Because if people are not well informed, you can't have a functional democracy. Jefferson said, you know, I'd rather live in a nation with no government and newspapers than in a nation with no newspapers but a government. That's how important they were. It's why the First Amendment to the Constitution says that Congress shall make no law restricting freedom of the press. The press is the only industry mentioned in the entire Constitution of the United States. Doesn't talk about the oil industry. Of course, back then it would have been the whale oil industry. Doesn't talk about the logging industry, doesn't talk about mining, doesn't talk about the Pony Express, doesn't talk about the post office, doesn't talk about, you know, steel, doesn't talk about, no industry. Except the press. And it speaks of them to say explicitly that they shall have these protections, and they went even beyond the protections. They gave them subsidies. We gave the press subsidies. And for 200 years in the United States, the press got it that their job was to report the news. And if the corporations that owned the press lost money reporting the news, that was the price that they paid. That was the trade that they made with we the people, with society, with American society, with the government of the United States, with we the people. That was the trade that they made with all of us in exchange for the subsidies, those lower rates for the mailing of newspapers, and initially for the actually subsidy of the newsprint, and for the use of the spectrum, the broadcast spectrum that we all own collectively, or in the case of cable, for the use of the rights of way, the roadways that are maintained by we the people collectively with our tax dollars to string their cables on. Very simple. We said, you know, if you're going to use this stuff that we own, the ether, you know, the airwaves, if you're going to use this stuff that we own, the rights of way that the cables run on, if you're going to use this thing that we own, the postal service, and you're going to use it at below cost, if we're going to subsidize you out of our tax dollars, if that's going to happen, then at least provide us with the news. At least tell us what's really going on. And reporters really took that seriously in the United States for 200 years. Walter Cronkite really believed that. And what got me all started on this thing is yesterday, while I was on the air, during the third hour of this program, or perhaps it was the second hour, anyhow, while I was on the air, George Galloway was testifying before Norm Coleman, the rather toothy senator from Minnesota. And Norm Coleman, who some suggest will be replaced by Al Franken. Very interesting. Here in Portland, Al came to town last week, and I was one of the speakers who spoke before he did, you know, sort of introducing him. And the guy who introduced him said, introducing Al Franken, he said, and the next senator from the great state of Minnesota, Al Franken. And Franken got up, and everybody's applauding, thank you very, very much, blah, blah, blah. And I think it would be great. He'd make a great senator. And Norm Coleman, the senator, the Republican senator from Minnesota, sitting up there in the United States Senate thinking that he's got a dog by the tail. He's got this thing. He's gonna whip it around his head and just, you know, slap it up against the wall. This dog being George Galloway. He's got this guy, and he's got the goods on him, boy. He's got a piece of paper here that says that Galloway got some chits, C-H-I-T-S, got some papers, got some agreements from Saddam Hussein saying that he had the right to buy oil at a certain low price and then resell it as a way of getting around the oil for food restrictions. Well, Coleman hadn't done his homework. What he didn't know was that those papers that he had, which last week he had used to charge Galloway with essentially treason against the world, complicity with Saddam Hussein, what he didn't know was that those were provided to our intelligence service by Ahmed Chalabi back when they were ginning up phony intelligence for the war. It was part of the phony intelligence process. And there's no truth to them. And Galloway comes forward and he says, there's no truth to this stuff. Show me the dollars that I got. In fact, let's let Mr. Galloway speak for himself.
Is a proven fact. It's a proven fact that these forged documents existed and were being circulated amongst right-wing newspapers in Baghdad and around the world in the immediate aftermath of the fall of the Iraqi regime.
Now right-wing, like the Washington Times, maybe, or the New York Times, or...
Senator, I gave my heart and soul to oppose the policy that you promoted. I gave my political life's blood to try to stop the mass killing of Iraqis by the sanctions on Iraq, which killed 1 million Iraqis, most of them children. Most of them died before they even knew that they were Iraqis.
Now, I just have to pause Mr. Galloway here. We're going to hear more of his clip. But today's, this is what got me started, was reading in the paper this morning after having heard this yesterday, and we will get back to Mr. Galloway, the Associated Press story by Ken Guggenheim, and this is carried by newspapers all over the country. I just happen to read it in the Oregonian, but I'm sure your local newspaper probably has the exact same story. The first paragraph, British lawmaker George Galloway denounced U.S. senators on their home turf Tuesday, denying accusations that he profited from the U.N. Oil for Food program and accusing them of unfairly tarnishing his name. Okay, fair enough. That's a good summary. Then the next paragraph, Senator Norm Coleman, Republican of Minnesota, questioned Galloway's honesty and told reporters, quote, if in fact he lied to this committee, there will have to be consequences, end quote. Say what? The second paragraph of the story saying, oh, Galloway came and lied to us? In fact, the only two quotes from Galloway in the entire story is one where Galloway says, Senator, this is the mother of all smokescreens. And another where he says, you have nothing on me, Senator, except my name on lists of names from Iraq, many of which have been drawn up after the installation of your puppet government in Baghdad. Those are the only two quotes. This was buried on page 8 in the newspaper. Now to what Mr. Galloway actually said.
But they died for no other reason other than that they were Iraqis, with the misfortune to be born at that time. I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq.
Now, Norm Coleman sitting up there, you know, trying to grin for the cameras and starting to look a little uncomfortable, thinking, well, you know, the American media won't report this. And it's really interesting. Yesterday afternoon, I went home after doing the program. The chat room had let me know about the Galloway thing. Everybody's like, this is really amazing. Go to Google News, type in George Galloway, hit the news button. The top 25 stories were all papers outside the United States. It was the 26th story. Was the first U.S. paper that had any coverage of it. Anyhow, Galloway continues.
And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies. I told the world that Iraq, contrary to your claims, did not have weapons of mass destruction.
But wait a minute. We thought that everybody in Europe thought there were weapons of mass destruction. Rush Bimbo told us that. He said that everybody thinks that there's weapons of mass destruction. The French think it. The British think it. Everybody thinks it. Isn't that true? Oh, it's not? You mean all those countries wouldn't join? The French, the Germans, the Russians, the Chinese? You mean all those countries wouldn't join us because they didn't think there were weapons of mass destruction? Well, certainly Saddam Hussein had to have something to do with this.
I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to Al-Qaeda. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to the atrocity on 9/11/2001.
But wait a minute, 70% of Fox News viewers know in their hearts, they know for a fact that Al-Qaeda had something, or that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. And weren't those Iraqis flying those planes? Oh, they were Saudis? Saudis? You mean that guy who was kissing George Bush and holding his hand? Oh, my. Oh, my. Fox News listeners, wake up. We'll be back with more of George Galloway right after this. 20 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, exploring the issues of the day. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Our chat room you can get to by going to tomhartman.com. However you spell it will get you there. And tomhartman.com, and just click live chat and drop you there. Or you can go to our blog message board, whatever you want to call it, and pontificate there as well. It's fascinating discussions in both places at the chat room. The place where I hang out while I'm on the air, I check it out during the breaks and interact with folks. Kent in Seattle on the line. Before we get back to George Galloway, hey, Kent, what's up? Oop, Kent just vanished. We lost him. I don't know what happened. Okay. Well, let's go back to George Galloway. Good time. George Galloway was just telling us how, I tried to tell you there was no weapons of mass destruction there. In fact, you know, it wasn't just me telling you this. It was It was Hans Blix telling you this. And Muhammad al-Baradei was telling you this. And Kofi Annan was telling you this. If you paid attention to what Kofi Annan was saying, Jacques Chirac was trying to tell you this. The world was trying to tell you, you don't need to send all these people to their death. But you did it anyway, didn't you? But George Galloway can say it better than me. We'll just let him in his own words.
I told the world, contrary to your claims, that the Iraqi people would resist a British and American invasion of their country, and that the fall of Baghdad would not be the beginning of the end, but merely the end of the beginning. Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right, and you turned out to be wrong.
And this is where he turns to Senator Norm Coleman. How dare he? How dare he speak to a Republican at like this? He turns to Senator Norm Coleman, a member of the party that controls the Senate, the House, the Supreme Court, most of the judiciary, and the presidency, and says to him, blood is on your hands, sir. Metaphorically speaking, of course.
And 100,000 people have paid with their lives. 1,600 of them American soldiers sent to their deaths on a pack of lies. 15,000 of them wounded, many of them disabled forever on a pack of lies. If the world had listened to Kofi Annan, whose dismissal you demanded, if the world had listened to President Chirac, who you want to paint as some kind of corrupt traitor, if the world had listened to me and the anti-war movement in Britain, we would not be in the disaster that we are in today. Senator, this is the mother of all smoke screens.
And here we have in the newspaper this one quote from him. Senator, this is the mother of all smoke screens. And it's the only quote from him in the entire article. Well, the one other one where he says, oh, no, you know, you don't have anything on me. And that's essentially it. And, you know, where is all this other stuff? I mean, he made all these points. He said, you know, I told you there was no weapons of mass destruction. I told you there was, you know, this and that and the other. He's going through all this whole long list, and none of it makes it into the newspaper. This man spoke truth to a United States senator. He spoke truth to power. How dare he speak to a Republican like that? Right. I mean, this is the take of the American press, apparently, because the Fourth Estate. Yeah, I know a few of the TV stations last night, you know, played short little clips of this, but by and large, the news media is not playing this as Norm Coleman gets his comeuppance, which is really what happened. They're playing it as, oh, this guy came over here and tried to defend himself, but we all know he's a crook. Yeah, right. And the evidence against him, it was a forged document brought by Ahmed Chalabi into Doug Feist's little bunch back when they were ginning up phony intelligence to justify a phony war so that George W. Bush could get himself, he could get the Republicans elected in 2002 and he could get himself reelected in 2004. That's what this war was all about. Yes, there was oil, but we could have bought the oil from Saddam. Oil was secondary. The control of oil is a bonus. This war was about political power. Mark my words. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Turn the world into one big Texas.
Oh, no.
Turn the world into one big Texas.
No way, over my dead body. Yes. Well, it's the Bush agenda. Turn the world into one big Texas. One of the most polluted states in the Union now as a result of George Bush Jr., when he was governor, making all of the pollution controls in the state voluntary instead of mandatory. And, gee, guess what? All these companies just decided, hey, if it's voluntary, I guess we don't have to do it anymore. We really don't have to do it. We have more of George Galloway here for you. The Iraqi oil deals, spring coming earlier, lots of news. Kent in Seattle back on the line. By the way, if you'd like to call in, our telephone number, 1-866-889 8894. Our toll free 866-889-8894, or drop into our chat room, TomHartman.com. Hey, Kent, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Tom?
Great. Our phones are working now. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Actually, I have a question that's a little bit off track, but it does have to do with the filibuster. It's more of a question. My understanding is that each Senate is allowed to pass rules for that particular Senate as long as it doesn't saddle a future Senate from undoing that rule. So isn't the filibuster, let's say they do away with the filibuster, isn't that something a future Senate can bring back in?
Well, the reality is that the Senate rules can always be changed by a majority of the Senate. In fact, that's the whole point. That's the technique that Frist is going to use. The Senate has rules that go all the way back to the founding of the Senate in 1797, I guess it would have been, when the Constitution was ratified. And those rules can be modified by a majority vote of the Senate. And one of those rules is the filibuster rule. In fact, it used to be that a single senator could hold things up. And so Frist is basically saying, okay, we're just going to vote to change the rules. And so, yes, a majority of the Senate can put the rule back in place as well. But, you know, why blow up 200 years of history? Why blow up what basically has been the thing that has protected the minority from the majority, that has made the Senate, you know, that last stop? I mean, the way the founders, when they first, you know, had this idea of the Senate and the House, put it together was that the House, you know, sort of like the House of Commons and the House of Lords, that the House would be elected every 2 years, that they would be the closest to the ground, they would be the ones who were directly answerable to the people, and it would be the place of lots of commotion and lots of noise and lots of rabble and rousing and that kind of stuff, right? And that the Senate would be the thoughtful, deliberative. The Senate, they would only be elected every 6 years, they wouldn't all stand for election in the same year, so they would be insulated somewhat from the people. And in fact, and up until 1917, the senators weren't even elected by the people. They were appointed by the states, in some cases by the governors, in some cases by the legislators. Each state got to pick how they appointed their senators. And so the Senate was viewed as sort of the last stop to keep us safe from the tyranny of a majority run amok. And that's why this rule, this filibuster rule, which used to be that a single senator could filibuster, and then around 1916, 1919, it became, you know, 60, it became two-thirds of the Senate, now it's 60 out of 100, you know, could stop a vote from happening. Am I making sense here, Kent?
Oh, total sense. I thought I had read, and again, I just want to qualify that I am not a Bush. I'm more of a Bush whacker. I like to prune the bush.
Okay.
Cut back the power, but
cut the shrubs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, get out the hedge clipper here. But the point being is that I thought there was a time. Actually, my question, the second question, is wasn't there a time in the 70s, 60s, or 70s that the filibuster? There was no filibuster.
No, that's not true. The rule for the filibuster has always been there. It's always been there.
Well, that's why I go and I listen to Right Radio, because I think I had Reagan on yesterday, and you know he's saying that it's perfectly normal. It can flip, no filibuster, and like a switch, you know, this thing could be flipped back on again in the future.
Well, it could. And what this is really about, I mean, let's talk about what this is really about. What this is really about is that they have a few circuit court judges that, first of all, that they want to get into the circuit court. They've got people like Priscilla Owen and Janice Rogers Brown. Janice Rogers Brown on record saying that the Social Security is socialism, that 1937 was our own socialist revolution in the United States. She would roll back Social Security. She would do away with unemployment insurance.
Hello?
She would do away with worker protections. That's Janice Rogers Brown. You got Priscilla Owen, who's taking money from Enron and from Halliburton while she's deciding cases before the Texas Supreme Court that involve Enron and Halliburton and ruling in their favor, by the way. These are the, you know, so number one, they're trying to get. But by coincidence, these folks are also opposed to women having the right to have an abortion. And that's why all the churches are coming out, not all the churches, a minority, a vocal minority of the churches are coming out of the woodwork and yelling and screaming about this. And that's what this is about. They want to suspend the rules long enough to get some clear anti-abortion right-wingers into the circuit court so that when Rehnquist or whomever, a number of the justices here, you got Stevens is in his 80s, you've got Ruth Bader Ginsburg has had cancer, you've got, several of them. I mean, you've got a bunch of elderly justices. Sandra Day O'Connor has talked about wanting to retire. She was talking about wanting to retire 3 years ago. And of course, Rehnquist with thyroid cancer, that when one of them gets replaced, they want to be sure to get an anti-abortion guy in there, and two or three of them if they possibly can. And they know that the only way they can do this is if they suspend the rules first. And then after they get these judges in for the rest of their natural lives, unanswerable to we the people, then they'll make the rules back the way they were. This is how the Republicans do things. It's like for 230 years, it took 15 minutes to take a vote in the House of Representatives, as Bernie Sanders has pointed out in this program so often. And then, the Medicaid bill or Medicare bill came along, and they didn't have the votes after 15 minutes. They lost. And so what they do, they held the vote open for 3 hours while Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert are running around offering bribes to people like Nick Smith, the congressman from Michigan. Bribes and threats. This is what is absolutely wrong with the system. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Ed in San Juan Capistrano on the line. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You're the most reasonable, educated guy I know. But it's not just Republicans who want it this way. You know, it's a few. And we've got to say it so that we identify just a few.
Yeah.
The Republican Party doesn't, isn't like that.
I would say the rank and file. Yeah, I mean, my parents are good Republicans. I mean, what can I say? They have my picture and George Bush's picture on the wall in the living room. I mean,
I didn't call to argue about that one. What I called was you're a very reasonable guy, and you don't believe in, like, what Galloway did yesterday did what Kerry should have done and McCain should have done.
I agree.
He put them to the wall and slapped them.
Yeah, he spoke the truth. That's,
didn't come back, did they?
Yeah.
They didn't come back and say, you're a liar.
No, they couldn't. It was, it's like Harry Truman, He says, I don't give them hell. I just tell the truth and they think it's hell.
Absolutely. And this is what was so refreshing yesterday is, guys like Bernie.
Yeah. Yeah, when Bernie takes on Alan Greenspan, for example.
Just about anything.
Yeah.
And they don't come back and say this, hey, you're out of time.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's all they can say, really.
This is why it was refreshing yesterday, and we need this in politics. Somebody who is not sitting there having an immoral relationship with another woman, somebody who's not doing something they can put their finger on and say, look, you're stealing this, doing that, but somebody that can be up there.
Well, even if they are,
gentlemen, you're a liar.
Yeah, even if they are, if Bill Clinton, even in the midst of Monica Gate, had started calling the Republicans on the stuff that they were doing, I mean, the Democrats have been playing defense for so long, they've forgotten how to play offense, and it's a tragedy. Ed, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Good point you raise. In fact, here's a little bit more of George Galloway before we continue with the call.
You are trying to divert attention from the crimes that you supported, from the theft of billions of dollars of Iraq's wealth. Have a look at the real oil for food scandal. Have a look at the 14 months you were in charge of Baghdad, the first 14 months, when $8.8 billion of Iraq's wealth went missing.
Now, keep in mind the oil for food scandal, in quotes, that all the right-wing talking points and bloviators on the radio are screaming about is $2 billion that is missing on Kofi Annan's watch. And in today's paper, it comes out that at least 52% of that was American companies. But anyhow, as he says, on your watch.
On your watch. Have a look at Halliburton and the other American corporations that stole not only Iraq's money, but the money of the American taxpayer. Have a look at the oil that you didn't even meter, that you were shipping out of the country and selling, the proceeds of which went who knows where. Have a look at the $800 million you gave to American military commanders to hand out around the country without even counting it or weighing it. Have a look at the real scandal breaking in the newspapers today, revealed in the earlier testimony in this committee, that the biggest sanctions busters were not me or Russian politicians or French politicians, The real sanctions busters were your own companies with the connivance of your own government.
Yeah. Speaking truth to power, George Galloway, a recently reelected member of the British Parliament. Matt in Kansas on the line. Hey, Matt, thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom, I'm calling to offer you a huge apology. Yesterday, I called your program, and I was all excited about Pat Roberts and his backing away for voting in favor of eliminating the filibuster. I read it straight out of the Kansas City Star.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, I don't know what has happened, but there is a correction printed in the Star now. I called his office, and they said, well, no, he is in favor of he will stick with Senator Frist. So
yeah,
I feel terrible, Tom, that I did that. I mean, it sure wasn't intentional. I mean, I read it. But.
Apology accepted, Matt. Here in Oregon, everybody figured that Gordon Smith is a moderate Republican. You know, Oregon's a fairly liberal state or progressive state, and everybody thought that Gordon Smith was fairly moderate. And in the Oregonian this morning, we wake up to read that Gordon Smith is going to vote with Frist to blow up the filibuster to detonate the nuclear option. And we had on my morning show, I do a 3-hour morning show here in Portland on KPOJ before this program. And on the morning show, we had people calling Gordon Smith's office for 3 hours. And they were getting voicemail, and they were getting hung up on, and they were getting told, well, you know, okay, so, all right, we get it. Well, you know, and they were getting like snotty talk back at them.
What I got too.
Yeah.
It truly was. And I asked for an explanation from both the Kansas City newspaper and his office about, you know, how was this, why did this come out this way? And they're pointing at Knight Ridder, and they're saying, well, I don't know where they got this story, and blah. Who knows? But anyway, bottom line is, I look at your show like the Holy Grail, and I feel bad about calling and giving false information. I want to apologize for that.
No problem, Matt. Thanks a lot for the call, and your information corrected. Jonathan in Virginia on the line. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Hey, man, explain to me the filibuster for judges. I don't understand what the deal is about the liberals saying, you saying, all these other hosts saying from these liberal channels about how these judges are, it's a 200-and-some-year thing that's been going on all this time, and it really is the first time that judges have been filibustered. Before this, they were held in committee. Now, the Republicans did do that. So have the Democrats held them in committee for years and years to hold
them
on.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
But this is the first time in history that the filibuster has took place against these judges. It is fact. It is. You can't say anything about that. It is fact.
And you know why, Jonathan?
Well, explain to me why.
Oh, you don't know why.
Okay,
here's the simple explanation, and this is not, you know, some partisan thing, and this is not, you know, I'm not taking a position on this, right? This is just how it's always been. The Senate has always been, they consider themselves collegial, like as in we're all in college here together kind of thing, you know, like, you know, the honorable gentleman and the honorable lady and that kind of stuff. They're always very nice to each other. They're very genteel. And so literally for 230 years in the United States Senate, before a president or before an administration would send a nominee to a committee and ask that that nominee get voted out of committee to the floor of the Senate, before they would send them, they would informally poll the senator and they would say, do we have enough votes to break a filibuster? Do we have more than 60 votes? And if the answer was no, they wouldn't send that nominee. And that's how the Democrats did it, and that's how the Republicans did it for 230 years. And the Bush administration finally came along. The Bush administration came along for the first time in history, and they said, you know, we're going to try and jam these guys down your throat. And we don't care about the traditions of the Senate, and we don't care about how it's always been done. And we don't, you know, we're just going to jam them down your throat, and when you guys gag on it, we're going to make a big deal out of it, and we're going to blow up the Senate rules.
Well, I believe you're wrong on that. I believe that changed in, 1937, that they had to be a 60% majority. 60 to 40.
Prior to that, it had to be two-thirds. It used to be 66 30. Votes, and then it became 60 votes. And prior to 1919, one single vote, for the first 150 years of this country, more or less, could filibuster the Senate.
Okay, well, that's my premises.
Filibuster
has never been done, but they just want their judges in, which I understand. It doesn't matter about what they say; it's their qualifications. It has always mattered.
But see,
Well,
that's we can differ on that, Jonathan. I mean, you know, these are judges who have consistently voted in favor of corporations and against human beings. They, Priscilla Owen, for example, in this case with Ford Motor Company, the seatbelt case with this kid, she stalled it for 3 years so that the kid died. I mean, his blood is on her hands, in my opinion. She was taking money from Halliburton when she was running for, as a campaign contribution when she was deciding a case about Halliburton. She took money from Enron when she was deciding a case in favor of Enron. I understand that there are conservatives who think that that's how it should be. The corporations should rule and the people should get screwed. And they like the bankruptcy bill and they like, asbestos, it's frivolous lawsuits. I understand that. And, that's a legitimate point of view that you have. But changing the rules simply to get your way is, in my opinion, wrong. And then to say, like, Michael Reagan and these other guys do, you can just change the rules back when we're done. No, I'm sorry. That's not American. That's anti-American. Jonathan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. I got to go. We got to take a break here. But, feel free to call anytime you'd like. I'd love to hear from people who disagree with me. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You see, the reality is only about two-thirds of Clinton's nominees in his first term, and only about, as I recall, 85% of his nominees overall actually got appointed, ever got out of committee, because they didn't try and push him out of committee. They, they would take a poll on the floor of the Senate and say, hey, we don't have 60 votes, so let's not push this thing out of committee, and just let them die in committee. And some of those people sat in committee for 2, 3, 4 years. Bush has, of the last 5 presidents, he has the highest, 96% of his nominees have gone through. He has the highest rate of any of the presidents. Of any of them. And it's not enough. Not good enough for them. No siree, Bob. They got to have the whole enchilada. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Anthony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, listen, I'm going to get to my point real quick, but you know that Bush was coming to Calvin College here in Grand Rapids, right?
I recall that, yeah.
Well, on the cover of the press today was Calvin professors protest Bush visit. Let me just read you what they said real quick. Your deeds, Mr. President, neglecting the needy to coddle the rich, desecrating the environment, and misleading the country into war do not exemplify the faith we live by. People are starting to stand up. And now they're being accused of being bad Christians.
That's
because
incredible.
They're against Bush.
That's incredible. And that from the Calvinist Church. The Calvinist Church 200 years ago took the position that great wealth was the sign of the blessing of God. I suspect that modern-day Calvinists are a little more enlightened than that, but that was John Calvin's position. And it's fascinating. That's because traditionally the Calvinists have been considered very conservative Christians. Remarkable. Anthony, thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. Appreciate your show, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And they're on WTKG in Grand Rapids. Much appreciated. Bill in Cleveland on the line. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Great to speak with you again. Hey, this media thing is just driving me as well as a lot of other people crazy. On the surface, I wonder, what the hell the administration has on the media. But on the other hand,
I can tell you what it is.
Well, I understand that the corporate ownership.
Well, it's not so much that. What it is, it's really very simple. Most of the folks in the media at the national level are stars, and they have like 6 and 7 figure salaries. And their ability to continue to be a star and have that $1 million salary depends on their being able to interview the president and have access to the White House.
Can I say something real quick?
Sure.
As far as I'm concerned, then, the major manipulated media is just as complicit in the war crimes in Iraq as the Bush administration.
I'm right there with you, Bill.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks a lot for the call. That's really what it's all about, is that these guys don't want to lose access, and the Bush administration has been playing them like a fiddle. And, Clinton never tried. Nobody before had ever tried this, had ever corrupted the press. These guys did it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to our program. The telephone number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. TomHartman.com, our website, if you'd like to catch up on what's going on. Participate in the blog and message section or drop into our live chat room where you'll find some of the finest, most intelligent, thoughtful, insightful, brilliant, and at times quirky minds in all of cyberspace. Welcome back to our program. So pleased to be here with you. Yes, Mr. Galloway has given Mr. Bush has given him a piece of his mind. Of course, it was routed through Norm Coleman, the senator from Minnesota, the Republican senator from Minnesota, probably soon to be replaced by somebody else. Let's in my mind, Al Franken would make a great candidate. But anybody, any Democrat can replace Norm Coleman. So, we played clips of that for you in the last hour. We will be revisiting it in briefer forms over the next 2 hours. I think it's worthy of revisiting. As we speak, of course, the Senate is deciding whether or not to explode, to detonate the nuclear option. And debates on that topic are ongoing. Erudite, quirky. Yes. Great. This is the chat room is giving me words to describe them for you. Yes, it's true. Yes, indeed. Let's hear what you have to say here. 1-866-889-8894. Spike in Easton, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Spike, welcome to the program.
Hey, greetings from Misconda.
Thank you.
I have a few interesting points I'm noticing with the Galloway testimony that, of course, the mainstream media in this country doesn't really look into that in too much detail. One is how they're trying to demean him and make him sound small with this oil for food scandal, which ironically is all created by the sanctions we had on Iraq for all those years that people like Chomsky and Nader had cried about for years.
Right, which led to the death of a million Iraqis, most of them children, as Galloway pointed out. And now we discover at least 52% of the money that was kind of smuggled out, shall we say, in the oil for food scam was done by American companies, and the Galloway had nothing to do with any of it.
Yeah, and I find that the most entertaining, if nothing else, that for years that was a liberal myth that Saddam was stronger because of the sanctions. And it turned out to be true. And, of course, that's a forgotten fact in history right now with our great media.
See, this what this proves is that there is a God and that she has a sense of humor.
The other part I find interesting about Mr. Gallo is when he talks about the true Robin of the Iraqis. I believe Robert Greenwald did that short documentary, Soldiers Pay.
Uh-huh.
And that's it's a bonus, at least in the DVD of the Uncovered about the Iraq War.
Yes.
And I find that interesting. That's another thing we've never really talked about is that the true Robin of Iraq occurred after the invasion when there was no security to prevent it. It may have been almost encouraged to rob Iraq.
The true plundering of Iraq. And not only that, we changed their constitution, which, by the way, is against the Hague Conventions and against international treaties, against the United Nations Charter. You can't change the constitution of a nation when you have seized them at war. You have to wait for peace to be reestablished, for that nation to have its own government, and then they can choose to change their own constitution. But we changed their constitution illegally. And in changing that constitution, we changed it so that their domestic corporations could no longer protect themselves. They couldn't, you know, there used to be, if you wanted to do business in Iraq, for example, you had to have an Iraqi partner. The company had to be 51% Iraqi owned. This is something that's fairly common around the world. In fact, we had laws like this in the United States for probably about half of our history. Japan, to this day, has similar laws. China certainly does. That if you wanted to do business, you had to have a local partner. You had to have a local agent. We said, no, you throw that away. Any company can come in, do whatever they want. Used to be that if you made profits in Iraq, you had to spend those profits in Iraq. You had to reinvest in Iraq. Now, with the changes in the Constitution, you can take all of that profit out of the country, take it back to where... You know, basically what we did is we turned Iraq into a neocon paradise. And you see the results. It's a disaster. It's just an absolute disaster.
To say the very least. But although it might not be as big of a disaster as potentially Afghanistan has become.
Yeah.
Because remember, we had promised Afghanistan we would rebuild everything, we'd make it better than ever, and we've spent so much money in the debacle in Iraq, we've done nothing in Afghanistan. And
well, not altogether, Spike. We are building a gas pipeline across Afghanistan right now.
And that's about it. And we've done nothing more than put more fuel in the fire of the extremists in Afghanistan, because now they can say, look, the Americans promised you this, and they're not delivering again. Yeah. And it's going to turn around against us. And for all we know, we could be losing 2-3 soldiers a day in Afghanistan. We don't hear it between, you know, the runaway bride and, you know, the smoke and mirrors we're always given on what's going on with our empire's foreign policy these days.
Yeah, before this thing goes one more day, I want to see Jenna and Barbara enlisting and sent over to Iraq. I mean, that's a cheap shot, actually. But it's so tragic that Jefferson argued that we should never have a volunteer army, there should always be either a draft or no standing army at all, because he said we don't want to have hireling paupers who are willing to be shot for a sixpence. And that's the situation we have. We have an army of the poor, and it's a tragedy. Spike, thanks for the call. I got to move along. I appreciate
it.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I think that the cons and the nut job right wingers are starting to hurt. I've noticed a definite uptick in the last couple of days on sites like Media Matters for America, Smirking Chimp, of all these real lunatic freeper types coming in and with their usual low level of discourse, saying, well, Galloway's guilty. Just wait. There should be international slander laws.
Mm.
There are. And he won.
Yeah, actually.
Every court case.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you can't say it's because Rupert Murdoch can't afford good attorneys.
Yeah. No, I agree that the right wing is melting down. And my concern, and this is a very real concern, and I think that we all should be very concerned about, is that, you know, when you corner a rat, a rat will run away from you, and it'll run, and it'll run, and it'll hide, and it'll hide. But when you corner that rat and it's got no way out, it will attack you. And it will attack you, a little tiny rat will attack a great big person in a way that can do serious damage. And I am very concerned that if these guys, as it becomes increasingly apparent to them, that they are losing power in a big way, and that they can't continue to rig the voting machines because it's just becoming too obvious, and that they can't continue to mesmerize us with stories about, you know, weapons of mass destruction and phony wars because we're not buying their lies anymore, and they can't continue to strut around, and they can't continue to have, you know, and say, oh, you know, mission accomplished, you know, landing on aircraft carriers and whatnot, and, you know, and they can't continue to have so-called town hall meetings where the only people who are allowed to attend are party sycophants. As they get it that this stuff isn't working anymore, my concern is that they may involve us in something that's really evil, something like an international nuclear war, bombing Korea, North Korea, and then North Korea bombs South Korea, and then now you've got a war between the United States and China, for example, because North Korea has treaties with China, or the Taiwan and China, you know, going to meltdown, or the Pakistan and India go after each other, and that we somehow brought it together, or even, you know, the scenario actually that many of them many of these guys on the right are actually pushing for, is that a war in the Middle East starts and it ends up in the plain of Armageddon, you know, 60, 70 miles northeast of Jerusalem. And it's the final battle, and they're all sitting around waiting for Jesus to reappear. And that is what really concerns me.
Well, what concerns me even more is the fact that through our generated so-called multicolored revolutions in Ukraine, in Georgia, we are trying very, very hard to provoke the Russians.
Yeah, and we're doing it.
And we are going to provoke them to the point that we may not make it out of this decade.
Yeah. George Bush Jr. would do well to learn the lessons of Katerina and her husband, of the Tsarina. And Tsar Nicholas, they thought everything was just fine right up until the last week, and all of a sudden, they realized the power of the Russian people. And George thinks that Vlad is his buddy, and Vlad will be his buddy as long as they both are willing to use the same torturers and support the same corrupt regimes. But there will come a time when Vlad decides that his interests are not George's interests, and then we could be in deep trouble, because the Soviet Union has enough nuclear weapons to destroy the world a couple dozen times over, and most of them are pointed at us.
Yeah, and more importantly, what the...
Although I have to say I'm more concerned about China.
Right, but what the cons and the nutjobs may very well end up doing, if you'll remember back to Dr. Zhivago, when they were rioting in the streets and the czarist officer went out there to bid them to disperse,
right,
and what happened to him. And that is what they are playing with.
This is
alienating the American people. They're looking at that.
Well, I don't think so much in the United States, but certainly in these countries that we control. I think that Afghanistan is on the edge of something that's going to look probably very much like the French Revolution or like the Afghans overthrowing the Russians. I mean, this is a real mess, and it's got nothing to do with Newsweek magazine. The cons would have you think that it does. Mike, thanks for the call. I got to move along. I do appreciate it. Shelley in Phoenix, Arizona on the line. Hey, Shelley, what's up?
Hi. Wait, I have to turn down the sound because I'm listening to you.
Yes, and there's a 5-second delay. So
yeah.
What's up?
Well, you know, everything is up, and there's so much I would like to talk about, but I'll just kind of stay with what you're talking about yesterday about the hearings. And I noticed, and this kind of all goes together with a couple of thoughts, we just came off of a weekend of hearing about in St. Louis about the media, and then that was kind of quiet, and then we fell into the Newsweek story. I noticed with the Newsweek story, there was almost a new... Oh God, a new tone. When the press corps finally questioned the White House, there was some anger, finally. We have had a media that's been totally complicit in letting this administration get away with everything. Any little bit of news that comes somehow gets pushed under the rug, nothing's brought up.
But they're still doing it. They're still doing it, Shelley. Look at this AP story this morning that's in newspapers all over the United States that doesn't mention anything about what Galloway said.
Oh, absolutely.
Instead, they're quoting Norm Coleman's slanders.
Absolutely, and it's kind of like the letter from Britain, and nobody's talking about it. And it, I'm not saying it's going to go away overnight, but there was a tone yesterday, almost of anger, that they were saying to the White House, "What are you going to tell us what we can and can't write?" And it was the first time we seem to have gotten this little bit of anger from the media, like enough is enough. They have been totally complicit. Who knows?
Yeah, we're up against a break here, but you have another 10 seconds, Shelley.
I have another thought, too. I would hope that enough Republicans get mad enough and listen and get mad enough that maybe there could be a new something in this country that the Republicans decide to take back their own party.
I agree.
Because,
I have been begging them to take back their own party. They really need to. Shelley, thanks so much for the call. Great to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I was one of you who stood up for
you. And welcome back. I got to warn poor Mike, the engineer here. He's fixing some light bulbs that I'm chowing down the garlic and the Robitussin. Nothing like. So if my breath mic is blowing you off the board, my apologies. Welcome back, my friends. It's always good to have good engineers around. Engineers keep us going. Engineers keep us alive. Engineers keep us on the air. Yay, engineers! Hey, Mike, are you a ham radio operator as well? You're not. Ah, okay. I'm WA8MWL here. Old ham. And flunked my first phone a couple of times back in the late 60s, early 70s. Anyway, more than you want to know. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We're going to get to your calls in just a moment. First, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is with us with our daily report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, hot stuff going on Capitol Hill.
Well, very hot stuff going on Capitol Hill. Of course, there's still fallout from that MP's testimony, and apparently Norm Coleman this morning was on one of my stations in North Dakota saying that basically they think they've got this guy. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I'll tell you who's got who. You know, Norm Coleman got hoisted on his own petard. What's tragic?
I think that they can prove that the guy is lying, but we'll see.
Yeah, what's tragic is that none of the newspapers are reporting on this. You know, they're all spinning it like, did Galloway tell the truth or lie about oil for food? And nobody's pointing out. He said, "Your blood is on your hands, Mr. Coleman. Blood is on your hands, Mr. Bush." Pardon my rant there.
Amazing. You know, Norm Coleman went to college with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine.
Yeah, who is one of the great
hair
gentlemen
down
of our
to hair down very, very long.
Yeah. Oh, really, Norm Coleman?
Oh yeah.
Oh, interesting. He was an old hippie. That's the problem. Is a lot of these guys, these neocons, are people who were lefties in the '60s, and they must have been the lunatic fringe among us because they've become the lunatic fringe on the right.
I always tell David Horowitz. I say, David, you know, you must have an oppositional disorder because in the '60s you were, you know, the far left of the opposition. Now you're in the far right. You just must love to oppose things.
Yeah, it could be, or it could be that he just loves to make money. See, if you
well,
go, you know, yeah, I mean, he,
oppositional.
He made almost $300,000 the last salary year that is published. David Horowitz did, you know.
Okay. Couple interesting things. One, there was the filibuster speeches this morning. Frist basically set the tone, saying that he rises as the majority leader of party of the Senate, but he doesn't rise for a party, rises for principle. And then Senator Reid from the minority says that this is a disturbing pattern on behalf of this White House and Republicans in Washington. He says from Dick Cheney's fight to slam the doors of the White House on the American people, to the president's refusal to cooperate with the 9/11 commission, to the Senate Republicans' attempt to destroy the last check in Washington on Republican power, and he said that the House majority's quest to silence the minority in the House, Republicans have sought to destroy the balance of power in our government by grabbing power for the presidency, silencing the minority, and weakening our democracy. And he ends by saying that they want to do away with the filibuster. They think they are wiser than our founding fathers. I doubt that's true.
Yeah, I doubt that's true, too. But do you think that they're going to pull it off?
It's very hard to say. I mean, I heard, again, that they do not have the votes.
We had Gordon,
maybe with the vice president's vote on a tie, they would.
We had Gordon Smith yesterday come out in the local newspapers here in Oregon saying that he would vote for the nuclear option to blow up the filibuster, which surprised everyone in Oregon, I tell you, you know, on our morning show here, a lot of callers. We had just tons of people. I mean, the phone lines were slammed. I gave out the toll-free number for Congress, 1-877-SOB-USOB, and you know, everybody was calling in to tell about their experience trying to call Gordon Smith's office. But time will tell, right?
Time will tell, and tomorrow we'll talk about stem cells.
Okay, great. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much, Ellen, for being
with
us.
Thank you.
Always wonderful to hear from you. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
The
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, everybody. Here we are, 27 minutes before the hour. Heidi made it into the chat room. This is so cool. Heidi Tauber, who's my co-host on the morning show on AM 620 KPOJ in Portland, Oregon. Boy, that just is starting to roll off the tongue after having done it for 4 weeks now. We do 3 hours of talk radio locally here in the Portland market, Heidi and I, and then I do this program for 3 hours. And great fun. And so our chat room is filling up, and Heidi just dropped in, and she says hi to everybody in the chat room. And now all we've got to do is find that secret website with the pictures of her. And, okay, boy, did I get a look. Sorry. Anyhow, welcome back. Let's go to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894. Let's see here. Gary in Columbus, Ohio on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I may have missed a little bit because I had to make a delivery here. I'm a truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding last hour, though, you were talking a little bit about with a fellow about the nuclear option.
Yeah.
In the Senate. One of the things that I think is not talked about, and I believe I'm correct in this, but in order to change the rules of the House, it requires not a simple majority, but a two-thirds majority.
No,
and that's an area. And that's an area that's being overlooked and not even talked about.
I believe you're wrong. I personally may be wrong, but my understanding, Gary, is that in the Senate can change its rules by a majority vote.
Well, I heard an interview with William Byrd,
uh-huh.
And he was talking about it, and I believe.
Oh, wait a minute! I know what you're talking about. Let me run this by you and tell you this. I believe that the Senate can suspend its rules with a majority vote, but it can. But it requires two-thirds vote to change its rules. Does that make sense?
There was something about it. Anyway, the point that he was making that they're having to subvert or go beyond the rules to change the rules like this in the process with just a simple majority.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
we're gonna have to get a constitutional scholar on here because, in fact, this will be a great conversation to have with Bernie Sanders on Friday. I'm sure he knows more about parliamentary procedure than any of us. But let me see if I can track somebody down during the break, the 10 minutes before the hour, and maybe we can get somebody on in the next hour talking about this. It would be good to nail it down. My recollection is now that you refresh my memory is that the Senate can suspend its own rules with a majority vote. In order to actually rewrite the rules, it requires two-thirds. But I may be wrong, so before I say that. But, you know, clearly Frist thinks that he can do away with the filibuster with a simple majority. So there's got to be something to that, or they wouldn't be doing this kabuki dance here, you know?
Yeah, well, they're having to do kind of a circumvent around some rules to get it done.
Right.
And anyway, hey, appreciate your program. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you, Gary. And thanks for listening there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, David in Santa Barbara, California, on the line. Hey, David, what's up?
Wow, Tom. Wow. I'm just too excited to be on your program. Well,
I'm excited to have you here, David.
Well, first of all, I want to tell you I discovered your program about 2 weeks ago, and it's been just great. It's a voice I thought didn't exist out there. And I speak to you because I'm a 26-year-old Hispanic-American coming from Texas here to California, and I have a lot of friends my age that are really concerned what's going on with this country.
Yeah.
And I want to say that, well, I have two questions for you. First, I just want to say I believe we're being too passive with these neocons and all this stuff that's going on with our country. And I have two questions. First, what can we do to start an impeachment process against this president?
Well, it's already been started, David. The Attorney General, Ramsey Clark, who was the Attorney General under Jimmy Carter, drew up articles of impeachment against George W. Bush. And I don't recall which member of Congress, but a member of Congress introduced them, and they're sitting there. See, the reality is that as long as the House of Representatives, which is where an impeachment would have to be initiated,
mm-hmm.
Is in the hands of the Republicans, they're not going to entertain the hearings that would be necessary to consider an impeachment. So the way it works is the House votes to impeach, and an impeachment isn't actually a conviction. An impeachment literally is the equivalent of, say, somebody robs a 7-Eleven, and they're brought up on in an arraignment, you know, and the judge says, okay, are we going to let this person go, or is there enough evidence that we should hold them over for trial? And if the judge decides to hold them over for trial, that's the equivalent of an impeachment in the House of Representatives. It doesn't mean that they say that a crime is committed. They say there's evidence that a crime has been committed. Then the trial is actually held in the Senate, and the Senate has the trial and votes on it. And this is what happened to Bill Clinton. He was impeached in the House, and the same thing happened to Andrew Johnson in 1860s, you know, after Lincoln was assassinated. And both of them were impeached in the House, and neither of them were convicted in the Senate. So the bottom line is that the House will not hold the hearings necessary to have an impeachment, and thus will not impeach a president when it's this partisan. The House was in the hands of the Democrats when Nixon was president, for example.
Okay. Well, the other question was, for example, Dick Cheney. He's vice president. Is there any way we can start a trial against all his criminal activities? You know, because obviously he has conflict of interest and this war that's over in Iraq.
Yeah, he made as much money from Halliburton last year as he did as vice president. In fact, probably more, given the appreciation of his stock. In fact, definitely a whole lot more. About a quarter of Halliburton's revenue now is coming out of Iraq, and they're all running it through an offshore corporation so they don't have to pay U.S. taxes on it, and they call themselves patriots. The answer, David, is that the president, the vice president, members of the cabinet, and members of the federal judiciary, that would be the appeals courts, the circuit courts, and the Supreme Court, are all subject to impeachment, but they all have to be impeached by the House of Representatives and convicted in the Senate. And so, again, as long as the House is held by the Republicans, it ain't going to happen.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm just disgusted with the whole situation, but I'm glad you're out there, and I'm telling all my friends about your program on iTunes. Well, that's where I get it from.
Well, that's great. Thank you, David. And you know, the one way that we can impeach George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and the whole bunch of them is at the ballot box. We the people can do it, and it's called an election. And in order for that election to happen properly in 2006, in order for there to be for us to take back this country, we need to be getting politically active right now, doing what you're doing, calling into talk shows, talking to your friends, getting people together, going to the meetups, join Democracy for America, join a political party, get involved with the Democratic Party. If you're involved, you know, if you're inclined, join the Greens, join the Republicans, whatever. Get involved, and because politics for these guys, for the guys on the other side, it's a 365 day a year sport, as it were, and we have to make it the same for ourselves.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, David. Thanks for the call.
See you later. Bye.
Yep. Thanks. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Tom in Coos Bay, Oregon. Coos Bay, Oregon. KBBR on the line. Hey, Tom. What's up?
Morning, Tom. Wish I could get your talk show down here. We could use that.
I'm on the air in Coos Bay.
No, I mean the one where you call in for Portland, the PO.
Oh, the morning show.
Yeah,
the morning show.
It doesn't reach this far.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a local show. It's really a Portland show.
Anyway, one of the things that Galloway mentioned there in his testimony, which I read on Common Dreams, the whole transcript was about our 1,600 killed, our forces killed in Iraq. And
right.
That's another story that the media is obviously misreporting. That's an impossibly low figure. It has to be much higher than that, considering how many seriously wounded evacuated we've taken out to Germany and other places. I think over 20,000 totally evacuated, and less than 20 of those have died subsequently. I mean, I think if the American people knew that, we've probably lost, you know, well over 5,000 killed over there in Iraq. They might think of it differently.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, families aren't getting together and counting these numbers. We're having to depend on the Department of Defense, and their definition of killed in action is very, very narrow right now because it's all become very political.
Well, it's frankly impossible to get the actual number. You say, they don't report it that way. If they manage to get a person out of Iraq before they die, well, then they obviously, you know, they disappear, quite frankly, off the record.
And one of the reasons it has been suggested that they banned the photography of the returning coffins at Andrews Air Force Base is because if somebody was there to take pictures of them, they might simply start counting.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were to count, they would discover that, hey, We've had 1,600 killed in Iraq, but there's 5,000 coffins that have come back. What's wrong with this picture? Something doesn't add up here. And then the American people would have to be informed. What you and I, and I think, you know, most people who actually pay attention to this already know, is somebody gets badly wounded in Iraq, they get airlifted to Germany, they die in the hospital in Germany, they're not considered an Iraqi casualty.
Well, exactly. And I think the old observation that, I think you say Jefferson was the one that said he'd rather have a free press than...
He'd rather have a nation with newspapers and no government than a nation with a government and no newspapers.
Well, exactly, and we're in a situation now where you almost despair that we actually can have a democracy anymore, considering it seems like over half of the people basically believe what isn't true.
Yeah, yeah, and, well, more than half of those who watch Fox News. More than, you know, only about 25 to 30% of people who listen to NPR or who listen to progressive talk radio believe that Saddam Hussein was one of the, you know, behind 9/11, or was that Iraqis were pilots of the planes. But the majority of people who watch Fox News listen to the Bloviators and right-wing radio, they believe that, and it's an unfortunate untruth.
And unfortunately, PBS is slipping, and that's another thing that needs to be reported.
Yeah, that's a whole other tragedy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call, Tom. Good to hear from you. George Galloway.
100,000 people have paid with their lives, 1,600 of them American soldiers, sent to their deaths on a pack of lies. 15,000 of them wounded, many of them disabled forever on a pack of lies. If the world had listened to Kofi Annan, whose dismissal you demanded, if the world had listened to President Chirac, who you want to paint as some kind of corrupt traitor, if the world had listened to me and the anti-war movement in Britain, we would not be in the disaster that we are in today. Senator, this is the mother of all smokescreens.
And he was speaking of the lies that got us into Iraq, and yet the newspapers are saying that he's saying the mother of all smokescreens is some way that he was trying to get himself out from underneath the oil for food thing. Huh? You heard it here. Dale in Nebraska on the line. Hey, Dale, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. Couple of issues. One, I'd really like to try and recruit Mr. Galloway to run for the Democratic Senate seat here in Nebraska.
Yeah, or President of the United States.
I don't think he'd have a lot of trouble knocking off our split opinion Senator Ben Nelson.
Yeah,
the guy is such a waffler that, of course, we're a very red state here, and 99% of the people get their news from Rush.
Well, and that's the problem. Ben Nelson's a Democrat, isn't he?
Well, he's supposed to be tough.
Yeah, and he's hanging on by his fingernails.
But he votes very Republican if you watch how he votes on a lot of the issues. But, of course, I jest when I say that. But, you know, one, I think it's really sad that it has taken a Brit to stand up and say what's on his mind to this Senate group.
Yeah.
One. And two, I found it just very refreshing to see the man do that. And I just have to think that the country is starved for somebody similar to him that is able to do essentially the same thing. And maybe Howard Dean will try to recruit him. I don't know.
But yeah, we need another Harry Truman. You know,
yeah.
Harry Truman said, "I don't give them hell. I just tell them the truth, and they think it's hell."
I know it, but I'd like to digress back to your story about the cornered rat.
Yeah.
You know, even a rat, one of the unusual things about a rat is if they get trapped, they'll even chew off their limbs to get free. So I would caution the lockstep Republicans that are following this administration to think about that.
Well, they've already done that. I mean, look at what they did to Paul O'Neill, because he dared speak out. I mean, look at what they did to Joe Wilson. I mean, well, you could argue he wasn't a Republican, but his wife was, you know, high up in the CIA. I mean, they are willing to destroy America for partisan political gain. It's that simple. You know, look at what happened to Nick Smith in Michigan, the congressman from Michigan, who, you know, his son was on a fast track to replace him, and he refused to vote on the Medicare bill, and Tom DeLake, you know, the hammer came down on him.
I mean, all of these issues, in my mind, rise to the level of potential impeachment, and yet it goes unspoken. One last thing I'd like to share with you is I'm trying to be real active here, and I contact the local newspapers. I just finally got a hold of our local television station, and I got a hold of the lady that basically decides on the stories to report, and I asked her why it was I had seen nothing reported about the Bush memo.
Right.
And she, you know, she flippantly says, well, there's a lot of them. And I said, well, the one I'm referring to is the one that was brought up during Tony Blair's reelection. Well, then she kind of went silent, and then she said, well, we really don't get into reporting on international news. And I said, well, you know what I said? I said, well, that's fine then. Why don't you report on Mr. Galloway?
Yeah.
And she didn't have one thing to say about it, but I would encourage everybody, you know, we have to contact these people.
Contact your newspapers, yeah. Hold their feet to the fire. Contact your newspapers and your television stations. The unfortunate fact of the matter is that very few radio stations produce their own local news any longer, but the television stations still do, and our newspapers still do. And even if it's a Gannett-owned local, you know, local paper, you can still call and raise hell with them and say, hey, you know, why are you not reporting this honestly?
Absolutely.
Why are you not telling
us
what's really going on? We have a right to that. This is the United States of America, after all. I mean, this is our founding notion, was that the press is an important and an independent. The press is the only part of the only industry that's mentioned in the Constitution. It's you got me going there, Dave.
Tom, you get me to ranting.
Yeah, well,
but anyway, I just wanted to report and tell everybody, you know, we all have to take and do our part.
Yeah.
If that means even phone calls or, like you said, getting active or whatever. But I'm sure I'm the first person here in the state to call and rant to them. And I may ultimately have to move to Oregon if this keeps up.
Yeah, well, it's a great place, but you should be taking back Nebraska first. Dale, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us there. I do appreciate it. Welcome to the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States, the true patriots of the United States, the real believers in freedom, democracy, and government of, by, and for we the people. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Viagra for your brain, they call the program.
You first found me in my holding pen.
Uh-oh.
Stopped to take a look and stuck your finger in.
Oh, no, we're not... not going to go there. Welcome back. Tom in Eureka, California on the line. Is this a different Tom?
No, this is the Tom.
Okay.
Hey, I just thought I'd let you know that we had a better article in the San Francisco Chronicle. It came from Cox News Service, written by Bob Deans.
So it's better than the AP story.
Yeah, because that's the one that was in our local paper up here, and it's pretty pathetic, like you said.
Yeah.
But he had some good quotes in here. You know, where he said, you were trying to divert attention from the crimes that you supported, from the theft of billions of dollars of Iraqis' wealth. And he said that this was a clash of the British parliamentary tradition with the rather more sedate senatorial one. Yeah, that's what he told CNN. He said he hoped that he had reached the broader public. And then some of the bigger ones, he said in here, the quote, I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq.
Yeah.
And he said he told the world that your case for war was a pack of lies, and you turned out to be wrong, Galloway said, and 100,000 people have paid their lives, 1,600 of them American soldiers.
Oh, that's
you know,
great.
The ones that you had.
It made it into the paper. In fact,
yeah, it's in there. It even has a little blurb up here at the top, you know, hearing online. It tells where you can go online to listen to the entire thing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, in fact, here we have...
I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq. And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies.
Yeah, and so finally a newspaper actually quoted him and saying...
Yeah, again, I think they're like the third biggest newspaper in the nation, the San Francisco Chronicle. So you can get that online. I think it's
great.
SF Chronicle. And I wanted to say I stopped in to pick up your book at the local Borders bookstore up here because I got a gift card over the holidays, and they were out of it. They didn't have any of your books.
Oh, really?
Borders Books in Eureka at the mall. So anyway, you might want to call and get them in stock. They did mention that your paperback is coming out soon on What Would Jefferson Do?
Right,
what
yeah.
I was looking for.
Actually, I can't call follow borders and get books in, but you as a customer can.
Oh, well,
you
call
as a
back.
Customer have tremendous power with them. Me as an author, they just go, oh, that's the guy, he's trying to promote his books, and they hang up on me. So
well, I love the show.
You're the man, Tom.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Oh, my goodness. Where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. We'll be back with more of your telephone calls, more of George Galloway, and we haven't even got into some of the other news of the day. And, boy, I've got a GOPBS that's going to just curl your toes. Some amazing stuff coming up. Stick around. Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. This great nation making it once again this great nation rather than this rather depressing place under the neocon rule where the middle class is wiped out, the extreme rich get richer. It's funny, I got an email from somebody on our local show complaining. She says, I make $200,000 a year. Why are you criticizing? You don't realize you're in the crosshairs, too. It's like anybody. There's 7,000 families in America that make more than $10 million a year. They're the ones that this administration is running the show for. And call it what you want. Maybe it's a conspiracy theory. I don't think so. I got to share with you, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. GOPBS. This is just so good. The GOP PBS. Now that Kenneth Tomlinson, you know, Karl Rove's childhood friend, is now the chairman of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Ken Tomlinson. And he's wanting to make some changes at public broadcasting. And so here we have this from the soon-to-be-revealed website of GOPBS. This is not yet public. This, by the way, from patriotboy.blogspot.com. And thanks to Patriot Boy for this. 5 p.m., a very special Bert and Ernie special. Sesame Street becomes Rapture Road after Pastor Bob and Freedom Land Development Corp. run all of the brown people out of the neighborhood. Homeless, penniless, and desperate, Bert and Ernie accept the Lord into their lives and begin reparative therapy. 6 p.m., the News Hour with Jeff Gannon. In-depth reports on why Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid hates puppies, Hillary's trail of bloody corpses, and the proper amount to tip military escorts. 7 p.m., Nova. Fun in the sun at the beaches of Prudhoe Bay. How ExxonMobil is turning Alaska into a tropical paradise. 8 p.m., Nature with Neil Horsley. Part 17 of Mr. Horsley's comprehensive look at mules. 9 p.m., Jim Crow, a documentary by Bob Jones III. Bob Jones University President Bob Jones III uses photographs, film, and audio recordings in an ode to traditional heartland values. And at 11 p.m., UBC World News, fair and balanced world news from the Uzbek Broadcasting Corporation. Just thought you'd want to know. Now you're one of the insiders there, thanks to PatriotBoy at blogspot.com. Now you know what Ken Tomlinson, Karl Rove's childhood friend, has in mind for PBS. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Frank in Phoenix on the line. Hey, Frank, what's up?
To that caller that wanted the Portland station, just stream it off like the chatters do off the internet.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, my morning show can be heard on the web. If you just go to tomhartman.com, there's a link to 620kpoj.com is the website for the radio station.
Anyway, I wanted to say, I think it's not a problem between Republican and Democrats. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of a problem as a conservative philosophy. So this is what I wanted to say to all those conservatives that want to coddle these corporations. When they poison your kids with mercury in the water and your kids have these breathing problems because of pollution and the corporations control the government that get your kids killed. Remember, when they go crying to the bleeding heart liberals to take on these corporations to make them help, you conservatives remember that you called these same people communists that want to make the corporations take responsibility.
Well said, Frank.
Anyway, I just wanted to let that out to those conservatives. You have a great one, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Frank. Good to hear from you. I appreciate the call. Number 12 in Santa Fe. Haven't heard from you in a while, number 12. How you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. I haven't worked in months, and I'm a full-time student, among other things. And I really appreciate the package you sent me, and I'd like to know if you've had any Marion Barry pie or Terminator Stout up there in Portland yet.
No, I haven't. In fact, I'm not even familiar with those words. You know more about my city than I do, apparently.
Well, I'm from there. I moved here from there, and I'm probably moving back. And then, Marion Barry pie. And anybody, just ask anybody, and they'll direct you in the right direction.
Now, I've met Marion Barry.
Well, no,
The guy, you know, the mayor of Washington D.C. Dick Gregory introduced me to him once.
No, it's not crack pie. It's actually it's a version of a blackberry that grows up there, and it's a darker boysenberry, and it's one of my favorite pies. And basically, you can get like preserves, but the only place you can get a real good Marion Barry pie is in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And there's a beer up there called Terminator Stout, and it makes Guinness, you know, basically seem like a, runny, thin beer. You can almost stand a spoon in it.
And did you ever hear the...
I have some in their line, and have a great time. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, all righty. Thanks for calling number 12. Got to move along. It's like the old ad on what was it, Fire Sign Theater? See that bear over there lapping up that good old clear country water? Sure makes a big hairy guy like you thirsty, doesn't it? Like my daddy said... No. At times like this, I like to wrap my lips around a cold, sweaty, edible bottle of good old country Bear Whiz beer. Like my daddy said, son, it's in the water. That's why it's yellow. I can't do the commercial as well as they did. Anyway, and I shouldn't probably have done that in any case. Harriet in Seattle.
That's okay, Tom. We'll forgive you.
I have program directors all over the country right now going, what is he talking about?
Good question. Anyway.
It's better than Horsley, you know? It's better than Horsley. Okay.
That's true.
So what's up, Harriet?
Yeah, just one little quick comment. Didn't know you were a ham, but that's
yeah.
The point.
Yeah, I got my ham ticket when I was I got my novice when I was 12 and my general when I was 13.
Huh. Okay. A little ahead of me, but yeah, I had mine for a while, too. Anyway, two things. One, it's well worth it going to the BBC website and listening to Galloway's entire testimony. It's about an hour.
Yeah,
and it is well worth it. The other thing was, taking your words to heart here, getting involved, and kind of if you get an invitation to go to something, go. I got one to the Republican caucus last night.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, for all the county issues and some state issues.
Yeah.
So I went, and I figured, fine, I'm going to go sit in the corner and take notes. And guess what? I was the only one there.
So did you elect yourself as head of the county caucus or whatever?
Well, not quite. It was the precinct chairman, his wife, and myself.
Uh-huh.
And so it amazed me. It kind of amazed them too. And we were saying, like, where is everybody? And I don't know if this is encouraging or not, that maybe these are people, the really true grassroots could be ripe for the picking if the Democrats would get their act together.
Or if Republicans, there are good-hearted Republicans out there. My parents are among them.
Yes.
If there are Republicans out there who really, you know, believe in the principles that Dwight Eisenhower talked about a nation at peace, a nation that's an example for the world of being a good neighbor, a nation that deals well with its people domestically and internationally. I mean, Dwight Eisenhower, you know, I like to say Bill Clinton was the second best Republican president we had in the 20th century behind Dwight Eisenhower. And there are still some Eisenhower Republicans around, and I wish they would take back their party because, you know, we need the Everett Dirksons and the Barry Goldwater, he was a little off the edge, but we need the Everett Dirksons and the Dwight Eisenhowers again.
Yeah, I think we definitely do. And the
Nelson Rockefellers.
The precinct captain, their chairman, and his wife and I are all older folks, and we just sat around and kind of talked for an hour, and there are a lot of similarities there in that things like kids don't know history anymore,
mm-hmm.
They lack the interest, and a whole host of other things. And this it just, like I say, sort of hit me. By the way, since I was the only one there, I was really getting pushed to be the delegate to the county convention.
Uh-huh. Did you do it?
No.
That was a little over your willingness to play I Spy?
Yeah, just a bit. But, I mean, there are some things, I think, where we can make that contact.
Yeah.
And I think the sooner the better.
Yeah, I agree. When living in Vermont, I sent $5 to the local party, to the local Republican Party, and just to get on their list. And I sent $5 to the National Republican Party. And I'm getting my emails from Ken Melman, and I was invited last month to contribute $2,500 to George W. Bush and become a gold member of some elite circle and come to Washington, D.C. and have dinner with him if I wanted and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, I'm getting all the invitations. It's really cool what you can do with $5.
Yes.
So, or they're getting very hard up, one or the other.
Very much so.
Harriet, thanks for the call and for the tip. That's a fascinating story. Thanks so much.
Okay, Tom.
Great to hear from you.
Okay.
1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Lynn in California, in Eureka, California, on the line, listening on KGOE there in Eureka. Yeah, good old KGOE. What's up, Lynn?
I had a question, but before I thought I'd give a tip to one of your recent callers, and that was he was not able to find your books at the Eureka Borders.
Right.
But in our neighboring town of Arcata, there's a locally owned bookstore called Northtown Books, and they carry all of your books all of the time. They make a point of it.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh,
wonderful.
So he could just, you know, it's just 7 miles. He could go there and pick it up without a problem.
Northtown Books.
Yes.
Well, good
all
on
one
that.
Word. All one word. My question is, I keep hearing about the American Empire, and you don't really bring it up, but a lot of other people do, and I really don't see it unless it's economic and I'm not seeing it. I think that George Bush would like to create one, but I don't see that one exists yet.
Well, how do you define empire, Lynn?
Well, I guess I'm trying to compare it to the old Roman Empire or the British Empire, something like that.
Yeah.
And that I don't see. I agree that it possibly could be economic, but I don't see that either.
Those were basically extractive empires. They conquered other lands to extract resources, whether it was slaves or wood or minerals or whatever. The Spanish Empire conquering Central and South America, for example, Mexico. There are those who suggest that we are transiting into, under the Bush administration,
right,
into empire. And in fact, you know, Bill Kristol, a year and a half ago or so, said it's not bad for us to use the E word now, to say, you know, to use the word empire and to talk about the United States as an empire, because we need to have this giant footprint in the Middle East to secure enough oil so that we can all continue to drive our Hummers. And that's the big concern.
I guess when you explained it as an extractive and then explained what that was, yeah, I see that. I do see that now. I mean, because that is what they're up to.
Right. You control. I mean, it's always done under the guise of benevolence. We're trying to bring peace to the world. We're trying to help these folks out, all that kind of thing.
Right.
And that lasts. I mean, you know, after World War II, you could make a rationale for that for maybe 15 years in Japan and Germany. But basically, no. That's not. And because those were defensive wars. I mean, you know, those countries declared war on us first.
Right. Right.
Empire is generally about extracting something.
And we've been toppling democracies around the world for some period of time, all in the name of money, it seems to me.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, there are historians like Howard Zinn who suggest that we've always been empire, that, you know, our Nicaragua with the United Fruit Company, Hawaii with Dole Pineapple,
right.
Cuba with the American Sugar Company, the mining companies in various African countries, that really all that was about empire. And the reason why we got involved in those countries, the reason why, you know, we had the Spanish-American War and we took over the Philippines was because they had resources that we wanted, that it was really all about resources. And you can make that argument, although I would say it wasn't quite as blatant, at least back then.
Right.
Now these guys are actually kind of strutting around and proud about it.
Yeah,
that's the danger, because when the rest of the world starts perceiving you as empire, then they start fighting back.
Watch out. Yeah.
Yeah. And when they start fighting back, it can get very, very ugly. Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Interesting conversation in the chat room, a discussion about the FEMA sites, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And there's several websites out there suggesting that FEMA is building concentration camps all over the United States. Some suggest that they are benign, that they are there to deal with natural emergencies, you know, volcanoes, earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes. Others suggesting that they are there to round up folks. And others suggesting that they're just not there at all. And I have to say, I've seen the websites. I've never seen one of the camps, so I don't know. But it's one of those things I'd like to learn more about. I've heard the theories. Maybe we'll get one of these folks on for one of our Thursday afternoon Everything You Know Is Wrong segments and see what we can find out about it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Sylvia in Bandon, Oregon is on the line. Hey, Sylvia.
Good morning. And I wanted to state that I am so glad I found you on the radio. I began to think that the radio in Oregon was owned strictly by the Republicans and Rush Limbaugh. But
no, we're taking over, Sylvia.
Good. It's about time. Now, I wanted to draw your listeners' attention to a new book, which I just happened to be the first reader. It's a new book that came out of the library in Bandon, and it's called Cronies.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Robert Bryce, and it covers oil, the Bushes, and the rise of Texas, America's super state.
Well, that's interesting.
And once you read it, I mean, it goes back to the development of the oil industry back to the 1870s and goes all the way through and covers every president and the individuals that served in their administration. And I haven't reached George Bush's section yet, but I have come to the conclusion if I find any individual running for government that emanates from Texas, I definitely will not vote for him.
Yeah, it's the Texas cabal. You know, it's interesting. Dwight D. Eisenhower, back in July of 1954, said, if any political party ever comes out against Social Security, I'm paraphrasing now from memory, if any party ever comes out against Social Security or unemployment insurance, it is a party that will cease to exist. And then he went on to say, there is a small group of people who think that they can do it, and they include some Texas oil men. He said they are wrong and they are stupid.
The Murchisons and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
And
the Hunt brothers. And
the Hunts, the Hunts, even though they couldn't steal the silver.
Yeah.
That's all brought out in the book. And
interesting.
I find it very illuminating.
Sounds fascinating. Have you read Wealth and Democracy, or is it Wealth and Democracy, Kevin Phillips' book?
Not yet.
It's a similar theme. It's really sort of the history of the American rich and their corruption of the democratic processes in America. Not just to maintain their wealth, but to acquire ever-increasing. Yeah, I really think that there's, you know, you can understand people wanting to be in the middle class. You can understand people wanting to have a comfortable life and have a retirement and be able to put their kids through college.
Exactly.
And you can understand somebody wanting to be in the upper middle class, you know, to have take a vacation and maybe, you know, own a second home or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even probably understand somebody wanting to have, you know, $1 million or $2 in the bank so that they and their children will have a couple of generations of security. But when you get to somebody who's got $50 million or $100 million, or $200 million, or $1 billion, and they're spending their life's energy to get another $1 billion, you have to ask, what's wrong with this person? I really think that what we're looking at is obsessive-compulsive disorder, classic obsessive-compulsive disorder, where instead of obsessing and compulsing on washing their hands, like, you know, the classic, you know, presentation of OCD, they're obsessing on money. I think it's a mental illness.
Well, they should all be confined to mental hospitals.
Yeah, well, they certainly are doing enough harm to democracy and have over the last couple of centuries that, you know, you can make the case for that.
Well,
anyhow, Sylvia, thanks for sharing that with us. I do appreciate it.
It's all illuminated in the book.
Okay, we'll check it out. Cronies by Robert Bryce. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much for calling in. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're going to get into what's going on with organized labor right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, on radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, and American FM on Live 365, as well as on cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back. Alec Dubrow is with the International Labor Communications Association, ILCA, one of the just one of the great organizations involved with organized labor, a division of the AFL-CIO. Would it be right to call it a division, Alec?
They call it an allied organization.
Allied organization, okay. Sort of partners in struggle or whatever.
In progress.
There you go. Partners in progress.
Yes, indeed. And our progress is blocked all the time. And let me just tell you what happened the other day. I was looking, doing some research on the web on unions, and I think it was a Yahoo search, and you get a few of these ads. And so I'm looking up unions, and there's an ad for something advertising 99% union free. And it was from a law group in Houston, Texas, that said, in 99% of our campaigns, we either stop or reverse the union. You know, contact us for help.
Really?
So, yeah.
They're advertising the fact that they do union busting.
That's absolutely right. And then,
wow. Well, you want to click on that link several times a day, because every time you do, it charges them a nickel.
Okay, if you like. I mean, they're advertising, so go to the Keen Group, K-E-E-N-E.
No, don't do that, because that doesn't cost them anything. It only costs them something if you hit a Google ad. But in any case, as you were saying.
Okay. Well, let them know what you think. Anyway, I looked them up, and they're offering right now a comprehensive two-day workshop presenting new strategies to create or maintain a union-free organization. And for only $795, you'll develop management strategies to minimize modern AFL-CIO tactics and confidently respond to union organizing and corporate campaigns.
You, too, can destroy democracy in the workplace and return the workplace to a little kingdom. You can have your own fiefdom. You can have serfs instead of employees.
Well, yeah, I've said it before, and I've heard it a number of times, that the workplace is the last vestige of feudalism in the United States.
And it's true.
Yes, it's true. I mean, no other
more
place
so
in
than
our
in
lives.
More so than in most other industrialized nations.
Absolutely. It's already harder here than in virtually any other one to form, join, or maintain a union.
And you know what's so mind-bogglingly ironic about it, Alec, is that when we liberated Europe,
yes,
the liberal Democrats, Roosevelt and Truman, liberating Europe and Japan and Southeast Asia, the liberal Democrats installed liberal democracies in those nations with strong worker protections and strong unionization, because they knew that democracy in the workplace would build a strong middle class, and that a strong middle class was the most likely thing that would guarantee that those countries would become and remain democratic over the long term, small d democratic. And it has worked.
Equally,
and then,
yeah.
And then these cons go into Iraq. Mm-hmm. And with the exact opposite philosophy, conservative Republicans take over Iraq, and they say, okay, the Democrats remade Japan and Germany in their image, we're going to remake Iraq in our image. And they changed the constitution of Iraq to ban labor unions. They changed the constitution in Iraq so that a corporation can do anything it wants. It can take all of its revenue out of the country. It has no social obligations, so that there's a flat tax of only 15%. They created Iraq as a mini conservative, you know, their utopian vision of how a conservative world should be, how they want the United States to be. They did away with Social Security. They're slowly doing away with the Iraqi equivalent of food stamps. And step by step, they're dismantling the social safety net. And guess what? Iraq is going down in flames. It's going down in chaos. It's devolving into civil war. And Japan and Germany are doing just fine, thank you very much. Yeah, their economies may have hit a little soft spot, largely because they're adopting conservative economic policies by joining the World Trade Organization and by the EU. But nonetheless, what we have is progressive liberal democracies work, and conservative regressive autocracies don't work. What a surprise.
I think that's fair, and what's unfair is actually to call this approach conservative, because in Japan, it was General Douglas MacArthur, who was known as the conservative's conservative, who was the latter-day shogun over Japan, who instituted very strong protections for labor.
Yeah.
He, too, saw that a strong labor movement, one, would prevent the return of fascism, but also that it would build economic freedom and prosperity for the country, and it did.
Well, and so did Eisenhower. Eisenhower agreed with that.
Absolutely. But let me just tell you quickly, our laws and our worker protections have fallen to a very low point, but they've been doing this for a long time. About 15 years ago, when I was president of the Writers Union, I went to a conference in London, and they hadn't seen many Americans come to these at this point. And it was an international conference of freelance writers unions from around the world. And I was talking to the South African representative. This was before the fall of apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, in our country, when they want to frighten unions, they say, if you don't shape up, we're going to bring in American-style laws.
Hmm.
This was in South Africa under apartheid.
Wow.
Even then, we were known as the most hostile place to labor unions.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it used to be the buzz was that in Japan, the Japanese worked harder, worked more hours than anybody
mm-hmm.
else in the world. And that was used to whip labor in the United States to say, you guys aren't working hard enough. Look at the Japanese. We are now the hardest working people in the world. And has it gotten us greater wealth? No, it's made us poorer.
No, but that's because they're always invoking the words efficiency and flexibility,
right.
Which I don't know how you understand those words, but any time management says efficiency and flexibility, it means more work for less money.
Right. For everybody except the senior management, in which
seems
case it means less work for more money.
It certainly means more money.
Yeah.
If they want to work long hours, that's their business. But
yeah.
But frankly, that's not what we're hired to do.
So, Alec, what's the International Labor Communications Association, ILCAonline.org, by the way? What's ILCA up to these days?
Well, we are preparing for our upcoming convention, our 50th anniversary, which takes place in July in Chicago. And we're part of this grand debate, which was just reported on Wynn Radio before I got on the air, on the future of the labor movement. I mean, this is of concern to everyone here. Certainly, we know we're up against an intractable and vicious enemy, but what we do is important, too. And so all the members who care to, and even many who don't, are getting involved in this debate. Where go we from here?
Yeah. Are you taking a position on the debate, or are you simply moderating it?
We can't do that, and because our membership is comprised of people from all the different unions, and it's our job to report it, and it's our job to facilitate good reporting from the unions so that the members understand what's going on. But we can't take a position on it as an organization. As individuals, we certainly can and do. Tomorrow, I am headed for a meeting across the street at the AFL-CIO of the communications directors of all the various unions and departments of the AFL-CIO, when this will be, in their words, explained, but in our words, probably hotly debated.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, that's
democracy. It is. It's democracy, yes.
There you go.
Absolutely.
So
anyway, do we have any time left?
Well, we should wrap it up pretty quickly
okay.
here. So, but
I just want to say that the AFL-CIO, with its allies in Congress, which includes Republicans, has introduced the Employee Free Choice Act to overcome some of the stumbling blocks that have been erected to unionization.
And what would the Employee Free Choice Act provide for?
It would basically put us on a par with Canada, which says that it provides for the certification of the union as a bargaining representative if a majority of employees in a workplace sign cards saying to that.
Is this what's called card check?
That is, it indeed is.
Okay.
And this would provide for that principle and also for sanctions against employers who try to stop it.
So it's
which, of course, they do that by hiring the Keene Group and others.
Right. So it's basically if you have an election and the union wins, the union's in.
That's what we hope.
It's democracy.
It's democracy.
What a radical idea. I'm sure the Republicans are going to oppose this.
Oppose it? They're going to sit back and wait. And it doesn't matter what happens in Congress. Our president would veto that in a New York minute if he ever went to New York.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but no, we still have to keep up the good fight. Alec Dubrow, the International Labor Communications Association, ILCA Online. Alec, thanks so much for being with us today.
Okay, Tom. Take care.
Keep up the good work. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. It's to the Tom Hartman Program, 16 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And before we go to the phones, I just want to play a little bit more of George Galloway, just lest we forget. This is so important that you hear George Galloway's words that were mangled and misreported in the United States so badly, and now you got Norm Coleman running around going, well, we think this guy lied. Maybe we're going to be able to nail him. Trying to change the subject from what was really, what George Galloway was really saying. And here is George Galloway speaking to United States Republican Senator Norm Coleman.
Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right and you turned out to be wrong. And 100,000 people have paid with their lives, 1,600 of them American soldiers sent to their deaths on a pack of lies, 15,000 of them wounded, many of them disabled forever on a pack of lies. If the world had listened to Kofi Annan, whose dismissal you demanded, if the world had listened to President Chirac, who you want to paint as some kind of corrupt traitor, if the world had listened to me and the anti-war movement in Britain, we would not be in the disaster that we are in today. Senator, this is the mother of all smokescreens.
Well said, George Galloway, Member of Parliament from the United Kingdom. On the Senate floor just now, this just handed to me, today's news. On the Senate floor, Senator Patrick Leahy said Republicans will compromise the institution of the Senate if they get their way. Here is the exact quote, Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. How can any United States senator look at him or herself in the mirror if they weaken the United States Senate? End of quote. And John Negroponte, good old Death Squad John, was just sworn in today as the new Director of National Intelligence. Negroponte said the United States represents freedom, the United States represents peace, and the United States represents opportunity. What greater privilege could any American enjoy than to pursue a career representing a great nation based on values such as these, not to mention the millions that I'll make. It ends at values such as these. So John Negroponte being sworn in as Director of National Intelligence. So Death Squad John is now in charge of our country. He brought death squads to Nicaragua. He brought death squads to El Salvador. He brought death squads to Iraq. And now he's in charge here. Should we be worried? 1-866-889-8894. Eric in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Hey, Eric.
How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Fine, Mr. Hartman.
What's up?
It's a pleasure talking to you again.
Well, thank you for calling.
I just want to point out that I think that the country, even people in the South who are struggling, who vote for Bush, they don't realize what's about to hit them. But what I'm saying is that the country is dependent on you guys up north to go all progressive. You know, up north, you know, we have guys like Shays, you know, supposedly moderates, but they'll put people like, they'll back people like DeLay on things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that just like a lot of people here are basically conservative and going voting Republican straight up. I think the North and other regions are going to have to try to put progressive Democrats at least in.
Yeah, I agree. But you had, I mean, in South Carolina, you had John Edwards. He's a relatively progressive Democrat.
Well, John Edwards is from North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina. Okay, thank you.
Right, but what I'm saying...
Close by.
Right, but what I'm saying is that that what people will do. We had Fritz Hollins for years, who was fairly progressive.
Uh-huh. You're right.
Right, but see, Fritz Hollins would have to struggle every time when re-election. He wasn't a shoo-in like Strom Thurmond was every time.
Yeah.
Strom Thurmond only had to work two times to get reelected,
Strom was taking all the corporate money. He was in bed with the defense contractors. He was a good old boy with the.
They love him down here. See,
yeah.
What I'm saying is that they love him down here, and people thought he was for them. Whereas it's been proven, like in Thomas Frank's book, "What's the Matter with Kansas?" That these guys don't vote for the interests of, just like you had the guy with labor.
Yeah.
You know, labor, to me, it started here with the right to work laws.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's 1947 was the Taft-Hartley Act, which allowed for right to work laws. And that was passed in 46, the election of 46. The Republicans took both the House and the Senate. Harry Truman was president. And in that election, they took both those houses, and so they passed the Taft-Hartley Act that rolled back parts of the Wagner Act from 1935 so that states could pass these so-called right to work laws. And the result of that was a disaster. Harry Truman vetoed the bill, and the Republicans in the House and Senate rode it over his veto. So, you know, you can thank the Republicans going all the way back to the 40s for the problems with working folks.
Right, but what I'm saying, am I still on?
Yeah, we got another 5 seconds.
Oh, okay, what I'm saying is that if you guys up north roll more progressively and show people down here there's a better way.
Yeah, we'll work on it. We'll work on it, Eric. Eric, we're out of time, but we'll work on it. And you guys down there have got to do it, too.
This is...
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one.
Oh, why, George?
Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run. Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
And welcome back, my friends. That from Jim Turr from BlueCanyonSatire.com. John in Ohio on the phone with us. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you. Listen, I really identify with Mr. Galloway. You got to love that brogue, and oil is right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
Another thing we're right about is carbon-based fuel.
Yeah.
I finished your Last Days book.
Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight.
Yes, sir. About a year ago. And I've done something fun with it. I've turned it into something of a yearbook where I ask anybody that I give it to put comments in the margin.
Oh, how cool.
It's become fun that way. But you had somebody on from Crystal Planet, Tony. Do you recall that interview?
About
a week ago.
Yeah, I don't remember the details. I'm sorry.
How did you find out about him? There's a number of your listeners who are interested in following through on that. And as a matter of fact, we sat in on a conference call, and he's asking for an initial investment for people to get involved in the green tags and what have you.
Yeah.
And I wanted to try to verify, just how reputable his business was and ask you how you had found out about it. Obviously, green energy is very important to
yeah.
him, as far as foreign policy and the potential.
Yeah, John, Louise books our guests. She produces the program and books the guests. So go over to our message board. Go to TomHartman.com.
I posted something there.
You did? Okay. You posted it in the section for the general program?
For the radio program.
Okay.
Right?
I'll point that out to her because, you know, she doesn't read it every day. And I'll say, hey, there's a message in there. You got to answer it, and we'll track it down.
I think it's vital.
Yeah,
really
we'll find
do.
Out the information. Okay, thanks
great.
A lot for the call, John. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Keep up the good work. And let us close here with a few thoughts from Mr. Galloway himself.
You can
admitting the disaster.
Excuse me. Here, we'll start over again. There we go.
I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq. And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies.
And there you go. A pack of lies. Thanks for being with us, my friends. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. Thanks to Scott for engineering our program, to Louise for producing it, the folks in our chat room. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.